You're listening to The Tales We Tell, a podcast about spooky stories, unsolved mysteries, and local lore. I'm your host, Hannah Parch.
And I'm Katie.
Welcome back! We're actually recording on a Thursday!
On recording day. Even though I feel like garbage.
Sorry about that.
But I am fully vaccinated now. I got my second shot yesterday afternoon, and I did not sleep at all last night because my arm was so sore. And, like, that's been really my only side effect, but I was, you know, like, even just laying in bed perfectly still, and my whole arm was just
like
achy and kind of burning. Like, not, like, you know, I'm having a reaction burning, but just, like, it's a pain. And every now and then I'd feel it kind of, like, radiate and shoot down my arm into my hand. So I couldn't sleep on my right side. And even just rolling over to my left side would, like, move it, and that would
hurt. You're just laying there like, no one touch me. Nothing touch me.
And I was like, can I just please close my eyes and go to sleep just like this and stay like this? And so anytime I would get to sleep, I'd move a little bit, and ow, it would wake me up. So I am running on fumes now. And I can't tell if I'm, like, sleep-deprived tired or vaccine-tired or both, but I'm here.
I was a meanie and was like, we can't not record tonight. I was like, it has to be either tonight or Sunday. And Katie was like, I can't do Sunday.
My mother-in-law's coming in town.
Oh, whoops. Well.
But I guess it, you know, like you said, it's going to probably turn out for the best because my tiredness is going to lead to cantankerousness.
Yep.
And Grumpy Katie episode.
Woohoo! Well, Grumpy Katie, do you want to introduce what we're drinking?
I do.
Please tell me.
You are drinking Summertime Sparkle.
Ooh.
It is a white wine that I made. And somehow in the fermentation and aging process, it actually got a little bit of carbonation to it. So there's a little bit of a sparkle to it.
This is good.
Yep. It's real fruity and juicy because I literally made it from white grape juice that I just bought from the store. But, I mean,
it tastes like wine.
It's entirely drinkable.
Yeah.
You know, like... I'd pay $7 for a bottle of this, even.
Yeah, maybe even $8.50.
Maybe. When the bottle's first opened, like, every time you open it, it still does the tsh.
I like that.
Like we heard at the beginning.
Yes.
Which, you know, I figured the first time you open it, well, there goes it all, the carbonation. No, every time you open it.
Yeah. I will say, as a disclaimer, I'm having a small glass, even though this is... quite the episode that we're about to do. I am still taking my antibiotic and my probiotic. Tomorrow's my last day. I'm really excited. Okay. I didn't have any announcements.
Let's just do it.
Okay. So, I'm going to preface this by saying this is technically, I will say this is technically true crime that I'm about to talk about. I picked it because I feel like I've been in a little bit of a rut lately. I don't know if anyone else feels that or if it's just me. And I just wanted to get back to, like, okay, my favorite episode we've ever done is Lost Cosmonauts. Because I really love that period of history and conspiracy theories and crazy
stuff. I like the conspiracy theory of it. And I like that there's a whole lot of, like, true history to it.
Yes. So... I really enjoy researching, like, history and dark stuff in history. So I was like, I'm just going to find something that I really can throw myself into this research. And I started doing that, and I was like, holy shit, this is a lot. So, as you listeners know from the title, this is part one of a two-parter. And as a broad topic, I'm just going to say we're going to talk about some Nazis.
All right. You were right. This is a good story for a Grumpy Katie episode.
Yeah.
Fucking Nazis.
So
sorry, Jarrett. Good luck with the crow sound. You're gonna use it a lot.
We're gonna just be saying fucking Nazis a lot. Okay, so I'll kind of explain the structure as I go. Alright, so first and foremost, I wanna kind of talk about how Germany got to this place of having the Nazi party. So,
don't be stupid, be a smarty, come and join the Nazi party.
Oh, I've never heard that.
It's from the producers, Mel Brooks.
It's probably why I've never heard it. Okay, so we're going to start at the end of World War One. I apologize to any non-American listeners. I'm going to talk about a lot of American history, and I'm going to try to explain it. So Germany's losing this war, and a lot of the German soldiers are growing discontent and frustrated because they're losing, and they're kind of looking around like, okay, what's this big cause that we're fighting for? Like, we need a purpose. This isn't working. Like, we're losing. We're supposed to be this big powerhouse. And a lot of them found their answer and their purpose in communism, which is what Russia, which was an allied force, was leaning towards. So Germany does lose the war. And when they lose, a lot of...
Spoilers!
Spoiler alert! when they lose, a lot of people blame communism for kind of poisoning German soldiers and kind of, like, turning them against each other, like, poisoning it from the inside out. and there's a term, Dolchstoss, which means stab in the back. And so Hitler, little baby Hitler... Not baby Hitler, but, like, before he was big Hitler.
The big bad wolf.
When he was just a little wolf, he latched onto this idea that communism was to blame for Germany losing. And not only that, but he also spread these conspiracy theories. One was about Jewish Bolshevism, which is the idea that Jews were a huge part of the Russian Revolution, which was when basically Russia overthrew their monarchy and established the Soviet Union, aka communism. And then there's another one just called Jewish communism, very straightforward, which was the idea that Jews were in positions of leadership and power in communist organizations throughout the world. And I will say one thing about conspiracy theories. They are, as much as I love a good conspiracy theory, they are more or less explanations to fit a narrative that you've already decided on.
Interesting. And now he's pumping out all this, like, fear propaganda.
It's very strange, right?
To push his own agenda.
It's very strange.
I feel like something like that happened in our recent history.
Yes. Well,
I don't know if I can put my finger on it. Oh, wait, I did, and now my finger is orange, full of Cheeto dust. Because he bit the dust. Suck it!
Well, my example of one of these kinds of conspiracy theories that people might be more familiar with is QAnon, which, if you don't know...
turn it off. Don't learn. Save yourself.
So QAnon basically started as an anonymous poster on Reddit. This is a definition from the BBC. Quote, a wide-ranging, completely unfounded theory that says that President Trump, former President Trump, is waging a secret war against elite Satan-worshipping pedophiles in government, business, and the media. So, I mean, I feel like if you think about it long enough, I'm not going to say it makes sense, but, like, you can kind of see why people would latch on to this idea.
Well, because it's a good rallying cry, like, pedophiles, bad.
Yeah.
Satan worshippers, bad. So, I mean, they're preying on these fears of these people, mm-hmm. you know, families that have children, they're terrified of kids, you know, their kids being kidnapped or molested, you know, they're afraid of, you know, devil worshippers
yeah.
and, you know, their kids or cats or whatever being sacrificed.
I thought you were going to say afraid of their cats joining a cult.
I feel like cats
I was
are,
like,
cats,
yeah.
Cats are too cool for cults.
Cats are the, I was going to say something about the coven. They're the leader of the coven. I don't know. Whatever.
But no, I mean, like you said, it makes sense, but it doesn't.
Yeah.
Like, if you are a logical, rational person, yes. like the two of us, that's freaking ludicrous.
Yes.
I mean, yes, unfortunately, it probably is true that some people in positions of power and government, some of them probably are pedophiles.
Oh, for sure.
But
because Jeffrey Epstein didn't kill himself.
But anyway, so I mean, like, yeah, sure, like, it's kind of like the one Skittle in the bowl of M&Ms.
Yep.
Like, yes, there's probably one or two.
Yeah.
Or probably more, because people in power also have money, and that just fucks with you sometimes. But it's playing on that satanic panic, that mass hysteria,
yeah,
these fears that these people have.
Yeah.
And
well, and it makes
kind of appealing to them and be like, look, you don't have to be afraid, because somebody is here taking care of it. Fall in line.
Well, it also gives them, makes them feel justified in having feelings that they probably already have. So in the QAnon example, a lot of far right wing people dislike Democrats, dislike equality for some reason. And
people of my of color and minorities.
Yes.
Let's just call a spade a spade.
But they're thinking, like, I really don't like them. And instead of addressing the reasons that they don't like them, which are deep within themselves, they hear someone say,
we're told to,
that person's actually a pedophile. You're right to hate them. Then they're like, oh,
they're all drug dealers and rapists.
Exactly. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So no, this kind of, the fear propaganda stuff,
mm-hmm,
just emboldens people who already have prejudices against a group.
Yeah.
And, you know, it allows them to kind of remove that mask.
Yeah.
And, you know, step out and actually say, hey, I don't like this group of people. I don't like this race. I don't like this ethnicity. I don't like whatever.
Yeah. And I don't like them because of this valid reason.
And it emboldens them.
A lie. this research is actually very terrifying because I think I said last night when I was typing up my notes, I was like, trying to follow the logic of a Nazi is very mind-bendy. But also, I feel like I'm reading a lot of contemporary shit that's happening.
Two sayings. Those who don't study history are doomed to repeat it.
Mm-hmm.
Those who do study history are doomed to watch everyone else repeat it.
Oh, gosh. No.
And then the other one, don't argue with stupid. They'll drag you down to their level and beat you with experience.
Oh.
So, like, trying to understand their logic. You have to dumb down your arguments, and like, you have to argue just the most ludicrous thing that could counteract their arguments.
Exactly.
And that's hard for rational people.
It is. Okay, so in 1919, Germany signed the Treaty of Versailles. So a year earlier, they had signed an armistice agreement that was like, okay, we're going to end violence. And at that time, they were kind of led to believe that the final terms of the treaty would be much fairer than they ended up being. Mm-hmm. So basically, everyone agrees the Treaty of Versailles was a really shitty deal for Germany. I'm not saying Germany didn't deserve some of it, but I'm also not saying that it didn't directly lead to World War II.
The punishment didn't fully fit the crime.
Exactly.
Perhaps.
So, some of the harder points of it. Germany was forced to give up about 10% of its land and all of its overseas territories. They were forced to pay exorbitant reparations. I didn't get the exact number in, like, francs, but it's the equivalent today of approximately $33 billion. They were forced.
Meanwhile, wasn't their economy already?
Yeah, their economy was
struggling.
Already struggling because they had just been in a war.
Yeah.
They were also forced to almost completely demilitarize. They were allowed only 100,000 in their military total, which, for comparison, the United States has 13 million in our military. And they weren't allowed to have an air force. So this is literally right after they lost a war, and they're like, and now you have no defenses. And they were forced to accept sole responsibility for the war, which that's just kind of a pride thing, but
yeah,
whatever. So I was kind of thinking of it in terms of if it was here. So if America had to give up 10% of our land, I don't actually know what that, I mean, at least Texas, right? It would be, you know, you lose a chunk of land.
Alaska. Like, it's already disconnected. Golly. It's a frozen wasteland. Just take it. Yeah.
But then you also have to get rid of your territory. So Puerto Rico and another territory that we have. I don't know.
I'm not great with my geography yeah. there.
Military is almost nothing. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, you think now, I have a lot of conservative friends who are of the mindset that currently the government is trying to take all of our guns. And just that idea of gun legislation and gun control puts people into such a fear-based mm-hmm. craziness of, like, they're going to take our guns. What are we going to do? They're going to take our guns, and then they could attack us, and then what could happen? So, like, imagine if your whole military got depleted and you weren't allowed to have one.
Fear leads to anger. Anger yes. leads to hate.
Yes.
Hate leads to the Trump side or the Nazi side.
I was going to say, or Hitler. Which could be interchangeable at this point. So by 1923, Germany's economy is in the toilet. The reparations, like, no one expected them to be able to actually pay them all off, but they were like, we're still gonna make you try. So the German mark was, like, drastically losing value just, like, every day. By November of 1923, it was 4 billion marks to the dollar.
Oh my god.
So it was real bad. So the German people are pissed off. They're scared. They're struggling economically. They don't have any kind of national defense. And this Nazi party starts to kind of gain a little bit of popularity.
Yeah, they're speaking to the fears of these people.
Exactly.
And they're giving them something to point their fingers at to blame.
Exactly. They talked a lot about community, but not an inclusive community, an exclusive community. So it was, if you're not Jewish or Romani or communist or whatever, or, you know, as we will get into, not hereditarily, oh my gosh, I can't say the words, genetically, thank you. Thank you, brain. Genetically, you know, pure to their standards.
Oh, you mean like me?
Yes, you are very...
And my husband.
Oh, gosh, Shelton is very Aryan.
Oh, yeah, no. You know, I never wanted to have kids, but now I'm considering it because, you know, got to keep that Aryan bloodline strong.
Got to keep it going. You should get tested, though, genetically tested, to make sure there's nothing in the, you know, genetics. Shelton, too.
Well, I have terrible eyesight. And high cholesterol runs in my family, so...
We'll see.
That's what we're looking at.
Another thing that the Nazi Party was doing, it was using this imagery of the old Germany and, like, the way things used to be. Mm. So, like, call back to before the war.
Make Germany great again.
Yep. Haha. They had these little red hats that they made people wear. and...
I thought they were armbands.
Well... Armbands, hats, swastika, MAGA. It's just,
you know, armbands at this time were more fashionable than the hats.
They had a lot of good hairstyles back in the day. They didn't have that Proud Boys haircut that everyone needs to cover up. So they also, of course, gave the people something to blame, which was communism. I'm so sorry. I'm going to be using so many air quotes in this. Communism, a.k.a. Jews... Which were the cause of Germany losing the war, a.k.a. the cause of all their suffering. Therefore, by the transitive property, Jews are the reason Germans are suffering.
Well, also, it's very common to have Jewish people as bankers and accountants mm-hmm. and, you know, just people who deal with and involve mm-hmm. are involved with money.
Right.
Because this goes back to, like, the days of Christianity and whatnot. Like, you know, can't handle money, or you can't collect interest. And the Jewish people are like, nothing in our religion says you can't do that. So you need tax collectors. We'll do it.
We'll take it.
Like, sure. You know, we're going to work hard. We're, you know, it's, this isn't against our religion. So there's a need. We'll fill that need. Yep. And so that's kind of how that stereotype started.
Which is, yeah. So in 1933, Hitler gets appointed Chancellor of Germany, and it basically, like, snowballs from that. From that position, he's able to very quickly establish a single party dictatorship. And the Nazi Party, as of 1933, had the support of a whole bunch of major sectors of the German industry, like steel, coal, insurance, chemicals, all that stuff. So they had a lot of big support behind them.
Coal miners, rednecks.
Yep.
Oh, wait, I'm sorry. That was here.
Oh, sorry.
That was here. Never mind.
Blue-collar workers, white-collar workers, so Nazism was officially known as National Socialism, but I'm not going to call it that. It was sometimes called Hitlerism, which...
doesn't have quite a ring to it.
It doesn't, but I feel like we should use it. So what it was... I should say what it is, because unfortunately, it's not quite dead. So it's a form of fascism, which, if you don't know, everyone, fascism is...
open your eyes, look around.
Authoritarian ultra-nationalism. Sound familiar? It uses force to suppress any opposition to its ideology. Nazism in general was... very anti-Western democracy and very anti-Semitic, obviously, and anti-communism. They were pro-scientific racism and eugenics, which, hold on to those two vocab words, because we're going to circle back to them.
Eugenics is such a mess.
Oh, yeah, don't worry, I got a whole section on it.
Like, it hurts every fiber of my science being.
Oh, yeah. Don't worry, I get a little science.
Oh, and I hate it that you just used that term, scientific racism.
Scientific racism.
I don't approve of that term.
Well, you shouldn't, because it's not real science.
I know, and that's probably one of the reasons why I hate it. Also, it's racism. Yeah, it's not okay.
You're putting two words together and trying to pretend that they're the right thing. So Hitler denied that Nazism was either right or left wing, but obviously it was pretty right wing, and it shared some of these far right themes. One was a belief that there were, quote, superior people, and that those people had the right to dominate the, quote, inferior people.
White supremacy is what you're saying.
Yes.
You're using all the air quotes. Go ahead and say it's white supremacy.
Yes.
Especially for the blonde-haired and blue-eyed.
Yes.
Like me. Bow to me, I am your goddess.
Besides the blonde hair, whatever.
What?
I was going to say, I have very fair skin and blue eyes, but mm-hmm. I realize we shouldn't be, like, bragging on how Aryan
I'm trying to do it in, like, a sardonic way.
Yeah.
I guess. Because, I mean, obviously I can't help how I look. And whole family, dark hair.
Really?
Like, dark brown hair, dark brown eyes. My dad has black hair. Well, mostly gray now, what's left. But his hair was black.
Wow.
My grandmother, my mom's mom, she also had black hair.
Wow.
Like, she was born blonde and then, like, turned jet black. My mom, uncle, all of my family.
Mm-hmm.
Dark brown hair, dark brown eyes. I am the black sheep. I am the milkman's baby.
You probably are. Okay, the other belief they had besides white supremacy.
I know it doesn't taste good, but just say it.
In that same strain, they also believed that they had a right to purge their society of its inferior elements. Which, that is eventually... Nope. So, Hitler's view of a, quote, pure Germany eventually led, as we know, to the systematic murder of 6 million Jews. Hitler did not kill any of them, the people that he convinced of this insane ideology...
brainwashed.
Killed them. So,
my... Well, just because he didn't pull the switch on the gas chamber doesn't mean that he didn't kill them. Because by transitive property...
This is true. We do like just the transitive like property.
Just like, you know...
The communism and the Jews and the war.
It's the Jewish people. Uh-huh. It's their fault that Germany sucks. Hitler killed the Jews.
Yes. So my big in bold question that I really wanted to tackle before I went down like 18 rabbit holes was...
Oh, you should have known this was going to get me fired up.
How did, quote, regular people... turn into murderers? And a lot of the information that I'm about to talk about came from a lecture that was called How Did Ordinary Citizens Become Murderers? Which was a
way to plagiarize. Gosh, Hannah.
I wrote mine first and then I Googled it and I was like, oh, this is exactly what I'm looking for.
Verbatim.
This is a lecture that they put on at the United States Holocaust Memorial Museum. So I'm going to include the link. It's on YouTube. It's about an hour and a half. But it's got a lot of good stuff in it.
I have an answer, a first stab at it.
Oh, good, because I have a short answer I'm about to say. So what's yours?
I mean, kind of going back to our Satanic Panic mm-hmm. episode, it's the mass hysteria uh-huh. and mob mentality.
Yep.
It's you play on the fears of people who are already scared and angry.
Mm-hmm.
And again, you show them something to point their fingers at for the blame.
Yep.
And remember this, the Stanford prison experiment.
Yeah. Yeah.
For those not in the know, college students were, they went to a prison where they became the guards. Mm-hmm. And within days,
guards to their peers. Like yeah. Some of them were prisoners yeah. and some of them were guards.
That's it. And so it's the guards started abusing their power mm-hmm. and tormenting.
Yeah. With like no prompting. It's just yeah. like that's the nature it's of that relationship, how the it
position
evolves.
Of power.
Yeah. Well, I was also interested in this because, again, thinking about things today, I'm like, okay, I know people who, you know, like I said, lean more to the right and are more conservative. And I would even say that I know people who would, you know, look at some of the police brutality, you know, situations that have happened and have said, well, that kid, you know, shouldn't have been walking around at night, or that kid should have listened, or that kid shouldn't have had a toy gun that he was playing with, or, you know, like finding and kind of buying into this idea that like, oh, it's not the police, it's not white supremacy, it's not racism, it's all, you know, it's their fault.
Well, it's her fault she was raped because she was wearing a skirt.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Well, she shouldn't have been drinking at a bar.
But I don't think that those people who would say that would, I can't see that they would actually then be like, okay, I will now kill a black person because, or, you know, or I will now rape a woman. I mean, the short answer to how did regular people turn into murderers, some of them already were and just needed an outlet and or permission to act it out.
Well, were some of them soldiers already?
Well, Germany was hugely that word.
Yeah, okay, never mind. I was talking about from World War One.
Oh. I don't know. I didn't really look into that.
Because, you know, like, what was that in the...
The teens.
The teens.
Yeah, the late teens.
And this started in the 30s. So, yeah. Like, they could have been young and in the military and fought for a few years.
This is true.
And then be older and recruited.
Right. Well, a lot of them, the second part to my short answer. Well,
there's also his scientists.
Oh, Lord.
I also used air quotes. I feel like we don't even need to say it because the big pause and yeah. the sarcastic tone, I think, implies that we're using air quotes, but yes. Yeah, just to be safe.
Yes. So the second part is what you said, that a lot of them fell into this herd mentality of the Nazi ideology. And I have a note here that it's terrifying to me to think that if enough people are doing something and acting like it's normal, even if it's literally murdering families, that it can be normalized to the point where people who would typically say, no, I don't believe in murder of innocent people, would look upon it and say, well, it's just a job that needs to be done, better them than me. I mean, and okay, so now I'm getting into my next bullet point.
Yeah, well, everybody watches, like, a zombie movie, and they start fantasizing, like, okay, well, what would I do in the zombie apocalypse? And, you know, a lot of people are portrayed as, like, struggling to kill the zombies because they're people, but they're not people. And then there's that internal struggle of, like, I'm not a murderer, but it's them or me, and they're not really a person anymore. And,
You said my next point.
Sorry.
So, my next point.
I'll stop being psychic.
My next point is that they started by dehumanizing the Jewish people. They looked at it as an us versus them, where it's better them than us. You know, someone has to not be part of the society, better them than us.
Well, I mean, it started with the propaganda. Like, they had literal posters that showed, like, in profile a person's face and, like, what the true German should look like. Maybe, like, a strong brow and blah, blah, blah. And then they had a Jewish person who it was a caricature of a human and something else. And, again, while I've been joking about my whole Aryan genetics, I have a huge nose.
You just have a Jewishness.
My friends, when I first went to my friend's house, they are Jewish. Her younger sister leaned over and whispered, I like her nose. And when I found out about that later, I don't know, like, this was one of the families that I have been most accepted into in my entire life, except for my in-laws.
Right.
Like, it's my in-laws and these people. Like, I was one of their own. Because I have a Jewish nose.
Because they like your
nose. And I love my lox and bagels. And, yeah.
Oh, gosh. I think you hit on this point earlier, too.
Probably, because I ruin everything.
That they felt threatened by any time you kind of separate us versus them, start looking threatening, or you see them as a threat. There was also kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy where the German people were being told, you know, Jews are dirty and they're poor and, you know, they're like rats.
They're greedy and they'll cheat you.
But then all of these Jewish people were forced into these ghettos. Mm-hmm. German people are seeing them in these ghettos,
and they're like, it started with the propaganda, you know, and like that caricature of the enhanced nose and other like unattractive features.
Yeah.
And then from there, moving them to the ghetto was like the true dehumanizing.
Well, and it is self-fulfilling.
Moving them into a zoo.
Exactly.
People could walk by the gates.
Well, and also, if you're going to put people in these economic situations, they, you know, like, it's like when people complain about like Title I schools not doing well. Well, you're not giving them any money. They're the schools that are the least funded. And how are you expect? And so then you complain, well, poor kids aren't smart. Poor kids don't do well in school.
Don't even get me started on redlining. I will rant and rave about that all night.
Okay,
but we've got to get... Yeah, I mean, it sucks because the kid that has the cure for cancer might be stuck in an unfortunate economic situation, and no amount of pulling himself up by his bootstraps is really going to, without a support system, is really going to help him rise from that situation. That's another podcast.
I know.
We need to start that one.
We're getting really close to, okay. So the other way that they are dehumanizing the Jewish people was they started talking about euthanasia. And it was presented as, which I'm going to get into this more later, don't worry. It was presented as like a mercy killing, almost thought of in the way that one might think of putting down a sick pet, of their quality of life isn't good. You're doing them a mercy
They're a sick human. Yeah. They are a blight on humanity.
Yeah. And you're doing them a favor because they're suffering, and it's better that you end their suffering than to force them to continue living like this. Okay. So Katie's just tightly shaking her head.
Fuming over here.
Okay. So in this lecture I listened to slash watched, Dr. Christopher Browning, who I actually think taught at UNC Chapel Hill, he, I believe, wrote a book about kind of how normal people fell into this. And he's talking specifically about the male perpetrators, the ones who were committing these crimes. And according to him, they fall into four categories. The first one is true believers. These are ones who are ideologically Nazis. They believe what they're being told. They believe in the message. They're going out and completing their orders to kill people because they believe that this is the best thing for Germany.
Right.
There are...
They're the this is my mission.
Yes.
It's...
They're feeling... Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Got it.
Second ones are the experts. These are engineers, doctors. These are the people who...
Scientists.
Yes. Who are... needed for the infrastructure of Nazi Germany. So they're not actually pulling the trigger, but they're the doctors who are...
Unless they're Dr. Mengele.
Exactly. The third kind were mid-level functionaries. These are the desk jockeys that are drafting and planning the legislation that led to segregation and exploitation of the Jewish people. But again, they're not the ones pulling the actual trigger, but they're still Nazis. And then there's what...
By the transitive property, remember, Hannah?
That doesn't apply here. Yes, it does. According to Dr. Browning, the last kind are what he calls grassroots killers. And these are the ones who are running the death camps, like, gung-ho coming up with new ways to kill people. The really bad ones. So there's another woman named Dr. Wendy Lowers, I think. She is specifically focused on the roles of Nazi women. Because, you know, women gotta be in this too. So the women weren't...
We can do it.
We can do it. This is so... Oh gosh, it's so frustrating as a feminist. So women weren't allowed to be in positions of power. They were going to be more nurses, secretaries. Thank you.
We need more.
Yeah, I need a little bit more. Nurses, secretaries, guards, etc. And although they weren't allowed into these actual official leadership positions, they were, like, really wanting to prove themselves to their male counterparts. They were like, we can do this job just as good as you can. Watch. I'm going to go kill a bunch of people.
Decades and decades long struggle.
Yeah.
Whatever you can do, I can do better.
Yes. There was also this sense of kind of, like, doing your part in the war effort, which... I mean, I think any society sees that during we saw that in America.
Yeah, that was very much here. I mean, that, yeah. I literally just did the Rosie the Riveter.
Yeah.
We can do it.
But here, we were riveting bolts? Rivets? Mm-hmm. Whatever. Going into factories and working and...
We were factory workers. Yeah. And those who couldn't go into factories were doing victory gardens and such. Yeah. Like, everyone was doing something. People were rationing. People were helping out with the war effort. In any way that they could.
Yes. In Germany, a lot of women were killing Jews. The men and women who either witnessed or heard about or participated in the murders, a lot of times were kind of caught up in their own concerns. We kind of talked about that a little bit earlier, where it's like, you see it happening, but you just think, well, it has to happen. They're doing their duty. I'm doing my duty. A lot of times they were kind of preoccupied with, how am I going to stay safe? How am I going to fulfill my duties? How's the war going? How's Germany doing in the war? All that stuff. And then after the initial shock of kind of realizing that people were getting murdered and not just, you know, humanely put down or imprisoned in, quote, work camps or re-education camps, they kind of grew numb to it, and it just kind of became routine or something that they just, you know, this is just the way things are. You hear gunshots over on that side of the neighborhood. Well, that's just them, you know, killing some, executing some workers who probably needed to be executed anyways.
Well, they probably were pretty fucking miserable.
Yeah. And they probably did something.
Living conditions were.
Oh, gosh.
And that one I had to use in air quotes, yeah. Too. Barely surviving conditions.
Yeah. They showed in this lecture an interview, which I didn't get the name, of a Nazi soldier, an elderly man. I'm not going to say a former Nazi. He was a Nazi soldier. And he was talking about how he used to routinely kill entire families. And he said, quote, "A person becomes almost like a robot." And he went on to say, oh, it was a horrible situation. We were forced to do it. It was shameful to talk about because they asked, like, well, what would you tell your families that you were doing at work? And he said, oh, no, it was shameful. You know, it was something shameful that we did. We wouldn't talk about it.
I'm very suspicious about that.
It pissed me off so much because I'm like, okay, so you feel ashamed to talk about it. And you were forced to do it. Someone told you to do it. You literally fucking kill, like, he's like, they were like, well, how do you kill the child? Like, how do you lay down a whole family and then kill the child? He said, well, you kill the father first because you don't want to kill a child in front of their father. You kill the father first because the kid doesn't know anything. And then you shoot the child.
I'm sorry, as a child who witnessed the death of their parent at a very young age, none of that is acceptable.
Nor is it true, or does it make any sense?
It doesn't matter who goes first. Neither should go at the hands of somebody else.
Well, and it's also like, and I'm so sorry if this is getting into, like, too much of a political thing, but, like, it's like when people talk about, oh, well, George Floyd was a criminal. George Floyd, you know, had just used a counterfeit bill. Okay. Didn't mean he needed to die. That, like, okay, someone told you were, your commander was, you know, very harsh and, you know, had strict punishments for people who didn't follow his orders. Okay. You don't have to kill someone. You don't have to take someone's life for that.
So one of the things that scares me most about this kind of thing is, mm-hmm. other than, you know, obviously ordinary people are monsters. Like, mm-hmm. anyone and everyone can be a monster.
Yeah.
It's entirely possible that we all have that monster in us. It's whether or not we give in to it.
Yeah.
And sometimes I'm sure it's a whole lot easier to not give in to it and have that self-righteous, like, I would never do such a thing. Mm-hmm. But I always, when I think about stuff like this, I always think about, it's so easy to say, well, I wouldn't just go blindly. I would see something wrong with that. But is that true?
Yeah.
Like, if you truly put yourself in the shoes of German people at this time, mm-hmm. if you truly felt what they were feeling, had their fears and concerns, and someone was telling you this, like, would you really, mm-hmm. you know, like, without the benefit of hindsight.
Yeah. Or without the benefit of knowing what the Holocaust turned out to be.
Right. Like, would I actually stand up against this?
Yeah.
Or would I follow blindly? And even worse, would I agree with it?
Yeah.
Not only would I.
Yeah.
Not only would I partake in it, but would I? And so, like, that's the thing that scares me, I mm-hmm. think, is...
Would you have the courage to actually... Yeah. Because, again, what I'm about to talk about is the people who... How much to blame are the people who didn't actually pull the trigger, but who knew about it, who saw it happening, and who just continued to be a part of the system that allowed it? And this is obviously a much more concrete, like, example in terms of you're part of an army or you're running a concentration camp or you're, you know, just turning a blind eye to it.
You've got a job and you just got to do it.
Yeah. And And a lot of what this turned out to be was soldiers. There were tons of soldiers. Dr. Browning calls them evaders, who couldn't bring themselves to actually pull the trigger. And so they would find ways to not get asked to do that. So they were still fully part of the system, but they would just, you know, I think he said, like, oh, they would make themselves known as, like, having a weak stomach or something. And so the commander wouldn't ask them to pull the trigger. He would always ask someone else. And so...
Which almost seems worse to me.
Yeah.
Because they know that it's wrong. Mm-hmm. And, like, they know that they don't want to do it because... It's not because, like, oh, I'm queasy. I don't want to kill somebody. Yeah. It's, I don't want to kill somebody because I know it's wrong. And they don't stand up against it.
Yeah.
And, like,
yeah.
I know it's easy for me to say that because I'm not in that position yeah. of, if I stood up, I might as well be looking down the other side of a gun.
Yeah.
But it...
Yeah.
It's almost worse in my mind yeah. for those people.
Well, and one of the things that Dr. Browning said was that technically soldiers were allowed to refuse to kill, meaning that there's not any record of anyone being punished for saying no to it. But number one, you weren't given a lot of time to make that decision. You didn't know that you weren't going to be punished if you didn't say yes. And you were allowed to say no, but you weren't allowed to push back against what was actually happening. So you could say, no, I'm not going to kill that, but
you couldn't stop it.
Yeah, but you couldn't say, this is wrong, we shouldn't be doing this. All you could say was, no, thank you, I'm not going to be the one to actually shoot that child.
But again, that option wasn't really advertised.
Yeah. Okay. So,
and I know that, like, me saying a lot of my comments, I come from a lot of privilege having never served in a military yeah. branch. And, but, like, war is war.
Mm-hmm.
I still consider it murder in my mind, mm-hmm. but I know that it's still different. This is straight up murder.
Exactly. Yeah.
This is not war. This is innocent lives being taken.
Yes. All right. So remember, I use those fun terms, scientific racism.
Never, ever, ever utter that phrase again in my presence, please.
I'm about to tell you what it is.
I already know what it is. I don't like it.
So it is a pseudoscience.
That's not even fair to call it pseudoscience.
It's a junk science that perpetuates the idea that one ethnic group is superior to others. So this was obviously very central in the ideology that Nazis were, you know, forcing into people's brains. The way it started, this is so stupid. In the 19th century, when the field of paleoanthropology was just getting started, scientists were finding a lot of fossils of, you know, modern man or evolved humans in Europe. And they were like, ah, we found evolved humans in Europe, therefore they must have originated in Europe, therefore white people are the original evolved
intelligent works. That's not how any of this works. Anthropology was my original major.
It turns out Europe was really the only place they were looking, so that's why that's the only place they found fossils. And by the 1950s, geneticists had confirmed that there was no, quote, pure race, and therefore there was not really any, like, significant biological difference between any of them.
Look at a skeleton in an x-ray. Tell me it's race and ethnicity. Tell me it's gender. I mean, if you can, if you're smart enough... But not, like, the general public probably cannot differentiate between a male and female skeleton.
So a lot of, because this is unfortunately still something that some people believe, modern studies that do try to point out biological differences between races often/almost always fail to look at the social and economic differences between the two studies. So one of the examples was, like, there's a study that was trying to say something about like asthma in black males and versus like white males, and it was like, okay, but you didn't look at, like, where the people that you're studying grew up, where, you know, like, the ones you think have it worse are growing up in these urban...
toxic waste toxic, dumps.
Yeah.
Because thank you, redlining.
Katie's going to do a separate mini podcast about redlining.
I might. It's so infuriating. Or just go watch Adam Ruins Everything. He's got a whole thing. Adam Ruins the Suburbs.
Great. And so, unfortunately, there are still probably exclusively white people who believe in racial purity. My examples are the Proud Boys and anyone who was participating in the Unite the Right rally in 2017.
Good people on both sides.
Good people on both sides. Both sides. So the other term that is central to this ideology is
eugenics.
Eugenics. Do you know what the word eugenics actually means?
I did, but I can't remember. It's on an episode of Bones.
Oh. It means good creation. So eugenics is the idea of selectively mating individuals with specific desirable traits in order to, quote, improve the human race. It's this idea of breeding out undesirable traits, which in the context that we're going to talk about were considered mental illness, criminal tendencies, which is hilarious to me, disease, physical disabilities, etc. It encourages the, quote, superior people to procreate and discourages anyone outside of social norms from procreating. And actually Plato advocated for it in the Republic. But in his version, parent-child incest was bad, you know, inbreeding, but brother-sister incest good or okay. So parent-child bad, brother-sister okay.
So the thing that frustrates me so much about eugenics mm-hmm. is that it's one of those, like, it sounds good or makes sense on paper, mm-hmm. but real-world application, no. Like, yeah. It's no.
Yeah.
Like, you know, we've been joking about, you know, my Aryan genes. I'm right. Blonde hair, blue eyes. I have horrible eyesight. I had to wear braces twice. I have... great skin now.
Oh, I was going to say, you have great teeth now.
I have great teeth now. Thanks, Dad, for all of the money, the lots and lots of money spent on my orthodontia.
Is that how you say that? Orthodontia?
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. Learn something new. I'm going to start using that word.
But yeah, like, and I had to be on cholesterol medicine in my late 20s because my family has high cholesterol. Right. And I mean, I could have gone on, like, a raw vegan diet and done CrossFit twice a day every day, and I still would have had high cholesterol just because it's in my genes. Right. And, like, it's not something that you could just breed out. Like, again, my old family, I look nothing like them. I've got blonde hair and blue eyes and a Jew nose against their brown hair and brown eyes and normal-sized noses. Eugenics is not a... it doesn't work.
Well,
and especially when you're talking about, like, mental illness, criminal tendencies, that's just a joke.
Well, and also,
it's just a fundamental misunderstanding of how genetics works.
Yes. Well, also, look at any purebred dog. Our very first dog my family had was a purebred golden retriever, and he had so many problems because... his mom and dad were probably siblings. And they all, like, you keep all of the bad stuff. I mean, like, literally poster child for dog diseases. And then they got a mutt right after him. And she's 13 years old and, like, spry as a little anything.
It's not even an elementary understanding of genetics. It's like, oh, genetics, this is how, like, traits, put these traits together, they come down. But it's completely forgetting and completely negating mutations mm-hmm. and recessive and dominant genes.
And also outside influences on behaviors and, like, mental states.
Well, I mean, talking about the study with asthma mm-hmm. and black men versus white men. Yeah, if they're growing up in these heavily industrialized urban areas, then mm-hmm. yes, they're going to be introduced or exposed to more air pollution, which will have an impact on that.
Yeah.
Versus you know, white kids growing up in the suburbs or more rural areas, even where the air is cleaner. I'm so tired and I'm so fired up at the same time. I'm going to leave your house and never come back, by the way. I'm so angry.
Okay, well, not to make you more angry, but the next thing I'm going to talk about is American eugenics. In 1886, Connecticut made it illegal for, quote, feeble-minded individuals or people with epilepsy to marry. Because then they would procreate and make more.
The fuck about epilepsy makes you fucking... I can't even speak. I'm so angry.
It's because they... Also, John Harvey Kellogg, the guy from the cereal boxes.
Oh, that guy.
Originated the Race Betterment Foundation in 1911 and established a pedigree registry for people.
He also thought that you could cure horniness with bland cornflakes.
Oh. I did see a thing.
The dollop does an excellent but also excruciating episode. Also, there's a drunk history episode on him. Everyone should listen to that dollop episode and watch that drunk history episode.
I feel like I've seen some kind of... I think it's a parody video about like a couple who's like trying to wait until marriage, and anytime he gets really horny, he just eats an entire whole raw potato.
I think I've seen what you're talking
about. It ruins it. Yeah. So, I mean, he might have had something. So under this idea of the Race Betterment Foundation, immigrants, minorities, and the poor were all considered unfit for procreation.
There was like sterilization programs too for homeless and poor.
Between 1909 and
now
1979.
No, I thought it was gonna be even more recent than that.
California state mental institutions performed approximately 20,000 sterilizations on its patients, many of them forced and or without consent, and many were performed on minorities.
Well, there was also I forgot about the horrible forced sterilization of mental patients, many of whom were not truly deranged. They just they had a small chemical imbalance, needed the right combination of medicine and treatment, and they were good to go. I'm talking about like actual, like, we will pay you to get a hysterectomy or a vasectomy. There are sterilization programs that...
Meanwhile,
have existed and have been they've been in discussion. And
I was gonna say, meanwhile, be like a childless single woman and try to like get your tubes dyed, and it's an act of God. You know, because your husband might want kids later. Your future husband might want kids later.
Oh yeah, no, man can walk into a clinic and say, "I want a vasectomy," and it's done that afternoon. Simpson. Like, I know it's not that simple, but a woman has to get permission from her husband or her father.
Exactly. Eventually 33 U.S. states would allow forced or involuntary sterilization on anyone lawmakers deemed, quote, unworthy to procreate. In 1927, the Supreme Court ruled that forced sterilization of handicapped people did not violate the U.S. Constitution. In the 1930s, sterilization programs were put in place in Puerto Rico to, quote, combat poverty. But on the DL, it was so suspected to have been a way to try and prevent the Aryan population from becoming contaminated. Air quotes all around. Also, some healthcare was denied for children unless their mothers agreed to sterilization, which that really made me uncomfortable thinking about the ways that people today talk about, like,
friggin' blackmail and holding people hostage.
Well, and the way that people talk about, like, welfare requirements.
Coercion.
And like, yeah. And it's like, oh, this, you know, talking about, like, welfare queens and trying to deny welfare to people because they don't fit what they think, you know, like, oh, that woman's having, she shouldn't have had another baby if she couldn't afford it, so she really doesn't deserve welfare. That's literally what welfare is for.
So I have a flip side argument to that.
Oh, okay.
My brother, who's not really my brother because I'm an only child, but we grew up together and he's like my older brother. He's a police officer in New Orleans.
Okay.
And, you know, when we first started out, his beat was definitely driving through the projects and everything. And he would tell stories about they'd pick up a kid for, you know, like shoplifting or just, you know, being a little
Right.
You know.
Being a kid.
Minor rat.
Yeah.
And they would drop him back off with his mom.
Mm-hmm.
And then a couple days, a couple weeks later, they'd pick him up again, and they'd bring him back to a different woman. Mm-hmm. Because in the projects, these women, whenever someone would get pregnant,
mm-hmm.
they would all submit that child as their own to increase their... So there is welfare fraud.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
There is people who use drugs and take welfare.
Right, for sure.
However, you know, every orchard has a few bad apples. Mm-hmm. But remember there was a, I think it was Tennessee or Kentucky and Florida,
mm-hmm.
drug tested all of their welfare recipients.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was less than 10% of them came back with any kind of drugs in their system.
Yeah.
I think less than 2% came back with anything stronger than marijuana.
Yeah.
And the amount of money they spent drug testing these people could have paid the welfare for something like 9 years.
Oh, good grief.
So they basically wasted 9 years of welfare drug testing to find...
To make sure people were worthy
Find a small handful of people who were using drugs.
Yeah.
Or potentially abusing. So yes, there are people who do abuse the system, but also that system is there to help people, and most of the people on that
also
need the help so that they do, that nobody wants to be on welfare.
And also, you're just not allowed to legislate women's bodies. Stop trying to legislate women's bodies.
Also, the longer you point at someone and say, you're a monster, you're a monster, you're a monster, they're eventually going to believe it.
Exactly.
So when someone says, you're worthless, you're good for nothing,
mm-hmm.
they're going to believe it.
Self-fulfilling
and they're going to stop trying, and they're going to be like, well, you know what? I will cheat the system.
Exactly.
I will make the system work for me. I will survive. Listen. I will try to thrive, even though I am a worthless piece of trash, according to you. And
Okay. We're going to end strong. You ready?
I want to go home now.
I promise you can go home in a minute. Okay. So Hitler's eugenics was heavily inspired by American eugenics. Way to go, everyone. You did it. You did it.
Yay, Kellogg.
Great job. In Mein Kampf, which I think he published in 25 or wrote it in 25. Anyways, this is a big manifesto that don't trust any white boy that tells you it's actually pretty smart if you read it. In Mein Kampf, Hitler declared all non-Aryan races inferior. He wanted the biological improvement of the German people, as we've mentioned, due to his poor understanding of biology and genetics. And he thought...
Well, that's what you get for dropping out of art school. Stop trying to talk science when you couldn't even make it through art school.
I feel like...
Like, I'm not saying art school is a cakewalk. I've had friends who were art majors, and they were way more stressed out than me at times. But art school is not science. Not saying one's harder than the other, but they are so different. Like, stop trying to talk science when you were an art major.
Failed. I feel like, what are those little squares called? The pundit squares about that you do in, like, high school biology? I feel like it's like he did one of those.
Gregor Mendel. And Mendelian genetics.
Yeah, and he was like, I understand. I understand genetics now, and we're going to make everyone have blue eyes.
Except he doesn't, because he doesn't understand about dominant versus recessive.
I know.
And mutations.
Okay, I'm going to
skip. Like, I am a homozygous recessive.
I'm going to skip some parts. So this was also had a lot of basis in social Darwinism, which was based on the idea of regular Darwinism, or the survival of the fittest in nature, but apply it to like society. The idea is that the strong will see their wealth or power increase and the weak will see their wealth or power decrease. And following that logic, if the Jewish people were seen as weak, it was only natural that they should suffer hardships, and therefore it was just nature running its course, and if you're killing them, you're just kind of helping nature along.
Except that's a fundamental misunderstanding of Darwinism, too, because survival of the fittest doesn't mean the strongest either physically or intellectually or socioeconomically, it literally means if you are more fertile and able to reproduce more. Go watch Idiocracy. It's my favorite horror movie ever.
Katie, we should have taken a picture of you before we started because you've gotten, like, progressively more and more frazzled. Like, your hair's kind of... Oh, man. Okay.
I didn't sleep, like, at all last night, and the way that I combat being tired when I need to, like, talk and interact is to get a little bit more hyper, and so I'm already, like... I'm making myself hyper, and you're making me really worked up.
I know. I'm sorry.
So I'm going to sleep like a baby tonight.
Okay. In 1933, there was the law for the prevention of hereditarily diseased offspring, which forced the sterilization of thousands who suffered from any kind of, quote, alleged genetic disorders. These could be anything from... cognitive or physical disabilities. We already mentioned epilepsy, schizophrenia, manic depressive, cerebral palsy, muscular dystrophy, being deaf, blind, homosexual. I don't know why these were in here. I put them in as a quote, idle, insane, and weak.
Lazy.
But
like for idle, like laziness.
It's very
like
subjective.
Super laziness, yeah.
Doctors were compelled to register every case of hereditary illness that they came across. And if they didn't, they were heavily fined. Also, information was collected from routine doctor's visits as well as welfare offices to determine if someone was, quote, genetically healthy.
Well, I'm dead. Or, well, I never would have existed because my mother suffered from depression, so she would have been sterilized.
You
would have missed out on the treasure that is me.
I for sure would not be here. In 1935, couples considering marriage were compelled to get tested for any hereditary diseases. And if one of them, this is actually my favorite part, if one of them had a hereditary illness in the family, the other one was encouraged to gently break off the courtship so as not to hurt their feelings. Oh, okay. Eugenics policies naturally led to euthanasia, which technically the definition of euthanasia is the act of painlessly putting to death someone who is suffering from a painful or incurable disease. A lot of times it's talked about as assisted suicide, mercy killings. There's a whole other road we could go down on, like, the ethics of whether, like, patient... like, I don't know what I'm trying to say. When the patient wants, someone with an incurable disease wants assisted, you know, medically mm-hmm. assisted help, whether or not I'm in favor of that. But Nazis obviously distorted this and took it upon themselves to determine who was suffering from a painful or incurable disease. If you have not guessed it yet, they were like...
It was all Jewish people.
All Jewish people.
They were suffering from the disease known as Judaism.
Exactly. And that's where I'm going to end it.
Thank you.
I know. So next, part two, we're going to talk about the ways that they went about that process of determining who was in need of a mercy killing. So, I'm sorry that was such a dark and heavy...
I just want to go home and hug my puppies and watch science documentaries.
Yeah, I'm really sorry. I'm also really sorry if you guys don't like history or me and Katie getting politically...
ranty.
Angry. but I don't want to say I enjoyed the research, but I really got into this research. Also, I'm going home to my parents tomorrow for the long weekend, and I've been texting my dad like all week about this episode, and I was like, okay, we're already gonna have recorded it, the first part, so I'm gonna fact check everything with you, and I'm just gonna like put in any corrections that I need to. But also, he's like, oh, I've got these. He gets the like the great courses lectures, and he's like, I've got two that I think you'd really enjoy about this and this. So I'm going to have some dad assistance for the next one.
And I'll have some dad critique and commentary
because
my dad is a huge, World War II buff, but he's more interested in it from the, I think the military, the tactics and side of things.
I'm really nervous now.
No.
That was one thing I was like, there's so much in here. I swear it could be a whole podcast series on just this.
Oh yeah.
So I know I shortened a lot of stuff.
So I'm also thinking about the field trips now that we're both fully vaccinated. High five. Yes. Now that we're both fully vaccinated, I'm thinking about the field trips we need to take. Well, yes. We need to go over to Oak Ridge.
Okay.
And go to the Atomic Museum of Science and Energy.
Ooh.
Great museum. Nice. All of it. Because, you know, Oak Ridge is the secret city. That's where the Manhattan Project was. My grandmother worked on.
Ooh.
And in New Orleans is the World War II Museum. Originally, it was the D-Day Museum, but it just kind of expanded. And so, like, I love that museum. Like, that's the museum that got me to, like and enjoy museums. That one and the one in Florida that's, like, the National Museum of Naval Aviation. It's... I had to randomly go there as part of this group trip. And I thought it was the most ridiculous thing. So my friend and I walked around the entire museum making jokes about it. And by the end, I was like, actually, I had a really good time here. Really cool. There was some interesting things. And museums I went back later. Cool. I'm a huge nerd. But we got to go to the World War II Museum in New Orleans.
Yes.
Because they have, because like I said, it started out as the D-Day. And they've got, you can go this way for the Pacific Theater. And you can go that way for the European Theater. And so, like, you can spend... I mean, you got to get an early start, and you go first thing in the morning. First. You get start, you can do Pacific, and you can go get lunch at the John Besh restaurant, which he's a famous chef.
Okay.
I think he's a multi-Michelin star chef.
Okay.
He's got lots of restaurants. And then you can come back, and you can do the European theater, and then you can go over to the dinner theater, where it's like the Victory Bells. They do like a singing dinner theater thing.
I have a request, though. When we do it... Can we, like, dress up in, like, 40s era...
Oh, I have several 1940s patterns
okay, that perfect,
I
can sell. Perfect. Okay, great. Okay, Katie, because I've been torturing you, tell me something you're looking forward to.
I've been waiting for this.
Besides leaving my house.
And crying the entire way home. Or, like, rage crying. I don't know. My mother-in-law is coming to visit for the first time in forever. Like, we were supposed to see her over Christmas, and it just didn't work out because COVID is stupid.
Right.
So she's coming down Saturday, and I'm going to do, like, a fancy Easter brunch, a fancy Easter dinner. I'm cooking a whole roast duck.
Yes, I remember this. Very excited.
And several other delicious things, and, like... I'm blessed. She loves me already, and so I don't need to impress her, but I still want to impress her.
And she is blessed because you guys are really good cooks at your house. So, I can attest.
I'm really looking forward to it, and I've already got Easter baskets started for her and my husband, and I know that she spoils us for Christmas and birthdays, and anytime we see her, she's got some treats or goodies. Like, there's this awesome chocolate shop in Richmond. Like, fancy, expensive, delicious, best chocolate
you've ever
had. There's an
awesome chocolate shop in wherever we stayed for your wedding.
Mm. Well, this is Gerhard's. I don't want you to have one if she brings me some.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, no, she always brings goodies. So I'm just excited to see her and spend time with her and impress her with my cooking.
Yay!
And give goodies and get goodies.
That's exciting.
What about you?
So obviously I'm excited to see my parents tomorrow because I haven't seen them since Christmas. But my big thing that just happened today that I'm very excited about...
Scooby?
Oh, okay, yes. Sorry, multiple things. So Scooby, our foster, is officially on a trial adoption as of today. He might have met his person. I'm really hopeful. I just really want him to be happy. It's fine.
Everybody send good vibes Scooby's way.
Good vibes to Scooby and Brian. Brian is the human, not another dog. So next week, which, by the way, this is me telling you, we're going to have to... record on a date that's not a Thursday next week.
So you get to change, but I don't get to change.
I'm dying over here. The reason being, I am taking half a day off work Thursday. I'm driving up to Winston-Salem to my alma mater, Salem College, which is a women's college. And my very favorite professor of all time, Dr. Hutton, who is my art history, like, inspiration, greatest man in the world, is doing a wine and design in the Maydell, which is our outdoor amphitheater.
That sounds cute.
I'm so excited. My college bestie is going to meet me up there. And I'm like, this is a dream I didn't know I had, which is that I want to drink wine with Dr. Hutton and have him teach me art. And I've decided I'm just going to make like a little kind of mini weekend of it. I'm going to get I found this like historic hotel. I'm going to splurge.
The Brownstone, I think it is.
Well, there's one that's in Old Salem that's a little out of my price range. That's a bed and breakfast. There's another, it might be the Brownstone. Whatever.
I stayed in their exposed brick.
Yes!
There's quilts.
Yes!
In the rooms.
Okay, yes. So.
Huge rooms. Like, the entire bathroom was as big as one of my last, like.
Oh my gosh.
You know, Hampton Inn rooms. Yeah.
So, I'm gonna splurge a little bit, get myself a hotel room, make a little. I haven't been back to Salem in, like, years, and I'm so excited. So, that's my looking forward to.
Bring a robe.
Oh, okay.
And mini bottles of champagne. For the room. Ooh, because okay. I think there's a fridge.
Okay.
Or most rooms and hotels have fridges. Mm-hmm. Worst case scenario, there's got to be an ice bucket and whatever. Sure. You can chill it. But like the mini bottles, you can have, you know, it's a full glass of champagne. You don't have to open the whole bottle. But treat yourself, relax, and just enjoy.
Yeah.
Pamper.
And then, well, I'll come back and we'll talk about the other horrible Nazi stuff.
Yeah.
So, thanks for sticking with us for this one, everyone, and Katie.
I was expecting to be, like, cantankerous and grumpy and just, like, sit here and make, like, snide comments, like, well, well, he had it coming, and that guy sucks. And,
yeah.
But nope,
I'm hoping.
My hate fire got ignited.
Yeah, I'm so sorry. I should text Shelton before you leave.
No, I'm like, so tired.
I'm so sorry. Yeah, tell him I'm sorry for keeping you so long and for, doing the opposite of, like, keeping you calm.
Yeah, I gotta go home.
Yeah, go home. Love your pups. Make your husband make you food.
Okay, love you. Bye.
Bye.